So, welcome back, listeners, to part four of my interview with Joe Alessi. This is Bob Elkier, his lifelong friend and a colleague. And Joe was in the middle of a story about how he was a young man, probably in junior high, was called in to play principal trombone with the Marin Youth Orchestra, and he had a little experience with alto clef that was kind of new to him. So tell us about that, Joe.
Well, yeah, the Marin Youth Orchestra, I remember it met in a couple different locations, but I remember it met San Rafael High School, I believe. But and there was one rehearsal where we read the Shostakovich Fifth Symphony, Hugo Bernaldi conducting, and I knew something about the tenor clef at that point. I was pretty involved with that, a little bit about the alto clef, not much, but all the first trombone parts in the Shostakovich symphonies, they go from alto to bass clef and really all over the place, but there's a lot of alto clef. And you know, at that point, I didn't understand the concept of that you're supposed to listen to the record first before you go to the rehearsal. So I totally became I came to that rehearsal unprepared, and I think I was in sixth or seventh grade, something like that. But and all the older guys were sort of watching me try to deal with this new clef right in the rehearsal.
Yeah.
So I was just sort of following along. It must have been the funniest thing to watch. if I had a video of that, boy, that would be something. But but that was my first experience with a big orchestral piece, and to this day, Shostakovich's Fifth Symphony is one of my favorites.
Yeah, I could see that. Well, you know, your mom tells a story about you. She doesn't remember what the piece is, but she remembers you wanting to play something for her, and you probably were 14, 15 years old, and you wanted to ask her opinion on it. And she listened, and she gave you the advice of always sing. When you play, always, feel like you're singing into your instrument. And she's told me that story 10 times because it's...
Well, I know what that piece was.
Well, tell us about that, because she always ends the story saying that she feels the secret to your success is that you sing into your instrument. So tell us about that, and tell us if your mom really had an effect on you musically. I'd like to hear about that.
Well, yeah, I think we stated before, she was a soprano with the Metropolitan Opera.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, I remember the piece that I was working on. It was something that was very difficult for me at the time, but I heard of the piece, and because somebody warned me that this piece would be played on the radio by a famous trombone player, and that was Jay Friedman. He was playing the Creston Fantasy with the Chicago Symphony, and so I tuned in and I bought the music and I followed along, and it was sort of a way to learn it. But then I started working on it myself, and I think as a young kid you tend to overplay things, you know, you tend to want to put so much into it that you don't, you know, you go beyond what is necessary. And certainly that was happening in with that piece. I was trying to practice it, and my mother came in and said, you know, this will go so much better, this phrase, if you just simply sing it.
Did she literally ask you to sing it vocally, or did she mean that figuratively?
That I don't remember, but I wouldn't be surprised if I actually sang it, you know, with my own voice. But certainly what it meant to me was that that was the first time that I sort of really tried to relate playing a brass instrument to how you would sing something just naturally.
Mm-hmm.
And to this day I remember that, and I always...
Is that something you tell your students?
I was just going to say that. To this day I tell my students exactly the same thing, that when you run into trouble, especially when you feel that you know, you get frustrated, put the horn down and start singing, and do that for a while until you start to feel good again.
Mm-hmm.
And then pick up the horn and then relate what you just did to singing, and it invariably makes it better.
I know this is off topic, but what percentage of the students you've had over the years would you say can actually sing, have good enough pitch in their head that they can sing what's on the page? And is there a significant percentage of students who, if they really, a gun was put to their head and they had to sing a difficult passage, they wouldn't be able to because they can't really hear the intervals? Do you know? What's your answer to that mm-hmm. question?
Well, some do it more naturally than others. But the ones who can't do it as well, I insist that they are able to sing, and I'll put them on the spot and have them sing in front of our larger class, you know, so that they do have to be able to sing. And then, you know, this I've talked about Wycliffe Gordon in the past, but he comes to my seminar and he is the jazz guest artist and has been for the past couple of years. But he says the same thing. You know, if you can't sing something, you'll never be able to play it.
Right.
And you have to be able to do that. So I'm always encouraging that with my students, and I don't know what the percentages are, but some people can naturally do that, and others can do it but haven't developed their ear. So
yeah,
I think that's something that can improve.
Well, on a related topic, excuse me, you know, Joe comes from a wonderful Italian family, and I studied with his dad, and I would hear his mom vocalizing. I find it impossible that hearing your mom's wonderful voice in the halls of your house, I mean, you wouldn't know this as a kid. I mean, kids, what do kids know? But I would just think that by osmosis, having someone, an opera singer in the house, who sings that innocently and purely would have an effect on you. I mean, I just don't see how it couldn't. You know, you couldn't.
Well,
go ahead.
Yeah, it did. It really did, because I could tell you that the trumpet lessons, first of all, started at a very early hour. I think 8 o'clock was the first lesson in the morning on a Saturday.
Yeah.
And I was still asleep, you know. And so I would hear these things, these Schlossberg and Arbonnes, and then the next guy would come in half an hour later and you'd hear the same thing, you know. Mm-hmm. But that would go on, and sort of there's mornings where my mother would vocalize or whatever, and I'd hear that in the background.
Yeah.
And this is all done sort of in some half state of consciousness,
yeah, right?
Semi-conscious, yeah. And you know, there was a lot of learning that took place, I'm sure.
Well,
you know, every on these particular mornings.
Absolutely, it just sort of sinks in by osmosis. Well, that leads me to my next question. I studied trumpet with your dad, and he was legendary for his strictness and his discipline as a teacher. I mean, most of the kids, you talk about, you know, joining us in the high school stage band, Brian Gillespie, Jay Skelton, Duncan Carlson, Jeff Gordon, we all studied with your dad. Your dad was
That's
the
why you guys, that's why you guys all gave me a hard time. Everyone
that's
you
true.
Guys.
You were the son of the disciplinary trumpet teacher. I mean, we couldn't beat him up, so we beat you up instead.
That's right.
Anyways, we're not talking about you. We're talking about your dad. Now, your dad had a big, imposing presence. Like I say, he was built like a fireplug, but a big fireplug. But he was also very, very. He was a fatherly figure to his students, and as a result, studying with your dad was a very serious endeavor. You had to take it seriously, and as a result, he had a lot of good students. And your dad. One of the great things about your dad is he played almost every lesson that he assigned. He always had his trumpet on his lap, and he always showed you how to play it, and he always did it with a big, commanding sound. So, you know, to be the son of that guy, I would think your dad would have had to have had... I know we may be covering ground we've already covered, but I just want to ask you, was your dad a big influence on your development? I know he hooked you up with Barry Ehrlich and, you know, Ned Meredith early on, but your dad had
well,
to have been an influence.
Even though I studied with these other guys, my father would always come in and help me, you know, from time to time, and you know, sometimes I wanted to help and sometimes I didn't. but you know, I've spoken to, for instance, Philip Smith, whose father was his teacher, and we have very similar stories. You know, that he was very strict, and if you didn't understand, if you didn't perform or execute something, you know, you'd hear about it in a very strict way.
Well, I remember thinking, geez, I see this guy once a week. Joe lives with this guy.
Yeah. Well, he was very, like you said, very commanding teacher. And when you were asked to do something, you did it, you know. Phil Smith's father, very similar, you know, if you didn't perform something correctly, he'd get pissed off. He'd let you hear about it.
Is that right? Wow.
Oh yeah, and so it taught me it taught me to practice, and also I think it taught me to have the mental discipline. That's the key word here, the mental discipline to focus and to execute and to really come up with the goods. I tell my students, don't drop the ball.
You know, you're right.
If you're handed the ball, don't drop it.
But fathers and sons, sometimes they fight, you know. I mean, did you...
Well, that's why I studied with, other teachers. I mean, there was the point where, he knew that. There were certain times where, like I said, I didn't want his advice. But you know what? Even though I didn't want it, he would finish his statement and tell me anyway. And I always listened to that, even though it was one of those things, you know, when especially as you become a teenager, the teenagers want to become more independent. They don't want to hear from their parents, you know. So, but anything that he ever said to me, I still remember to this day, you know. So, and he always had the best advice.
Well,
invariably, I had the best advice.
He did for me too. We've only got about 3 minutes left on this segment, but are you going to tell us the motorcycle story? Because it's a good story about your dad.
I know you really want to hear that.
I want to hear
Bob,
it.
Bob,
come on, go.
Everybody to know the dirt, you know. But well, whatever. I was I don't know why I on the block where we grew up, there was a guy across the street. He had they were very good with engines and lawnmower engines and little motorcycles and stuff like that and go-karts and this type of thing. And so I became intrigued about getting a motorcycle because the guy across the street had one and was selling it. And it was a little stupid motorcycle. It was a Benelli 50cc motorcycle. It was like a putt-putt thing. And so anyway, I begged my father, said, I'd love to have this motorcycle. And said, okay, but you can't take it out while we're not here. When we're here under my supervision, we can go out and have some fun with it, you know, on a back road or whatever. And so I didn't listen to them. They went out to the movies one night and said, oh, this is perfect. And so I get out the motorcycle, and what happened is the movie was they got the time wrong. It wasn't Friday night, it was Thursday night, whatever night it was, and they went to the movie theater and there was no movie playing, so they just came back home. So I remember going around the corner, and
you saw their car.
All of a sudden, I saw their car and I waved, and then I knew that was sort of that was the end of it, you know. Anyway, so it was.
What'd your dad say? What'd your dad say?
Well, I'm not going to tell the audience what he said. The listeners. You can imagine what he said. You can imagine. I'll leave that up to the listeners to imagine what he said.
Suffice to say that you didn't take the motorcycle out on your own again.
No, not at all. Not at all. And so anyways, that's just a typical teenager thing, you know,
Well, you had to have met Joe Alessi Sr. to really know what kind of man he was. He was a fantastic guy. You know, Joe, we need to take a break here. We're going to come back for part four. We're going to hear all about later times. But I want to invite our listeners, if you want to download this broadcast as a podcast, you can do so at www.robertelkjer.com, robertelkjer.com. And we'll be back for part four very soon. Thank you very much.